Blog Talk Radio.
We hold these truths.
This is a program about the making of a promise and the keeping of a promise. This is a program about the rights of people. This is a program coming to you over the combined radio networks of the United States, bringing you the voices of Americans, bringing you the voice of the President of the United States. This is a program for listeners in all zones of continental time, for listeners on ships away from home, for listeners in uniform, for listeners on the American islands in the two great oceans. This is a program about the guarantee made to the people of America 150 years ago. A guarantee that has been kept through peace and war and peace and war. A guarantee we call the Bill of Rights.
My name is Barrymore. I am one of several actors gathered in a studio in California near shores that face an enemy across an ocean now Pacific in name only. We are here tonight to join 130 million fellow Americans in praise of a document that men have fought for, that men are fighting for, that men will keep on fighting for as long as freedom is a strong word falling sweet upon the ear. What we enact here tonight has been enacted many times before in living flesh and blood. The people we portray have walked the world. The drama is an ancient one, the endless one, the struggle for men's rights to live their lives out peacefully and profitably in a decent world. It may be many of us people here are known to many of you people there. For with us, honored to have a part in this program of commemoration, are some whose names you may have heard. Such names as Edward Arnold, Walter Brennan, Bob Burns, Norman Corwin, Bernard Herrmann, Walter Houston, Marjorie Maine, Edward G. Robinson, Corporal James Stewart, loaned to us for this occasion by the Army Air Corps, Rudy Vallee, and Orson Welles. In New York City, waiting to join us is Dr. Leopold Stokowski and the Symphony Orchestra. In Washington, the highest name in the land, the President of the United States, Commander-in-Chief of the Army and the Navy, Mr. Roosevelt. But this is not a night of names, of personalities. Our names or any names are meaningless unless your names are added. Unless you join us. You, for whom the sacred rites were written, and to whom their keeping is entrusted. You, the guardians of what has been bequeathed to you by millions like yourselves, and by the toil of centuries as dark and menacing as this we live in. You, the people of the Federated States.
...150 years is not long in the reckoning of the hill, but to a man it's long enough. 150 years is a weekend to the redwood tree, but to a man it's two full lifetimes. 150 years is a twinkle to a star, but to a man it's time enough to teach 6 generations what the meaning is of liberty, how to use it, when to fight for it.
Have you ever been to Washington, your capital? Been there lately?
Well, let me tell you, it's a place of buildings and of boom and bustle, of the fever of emergency, of workers working overtime, of windows lighted late into the night. It's a handsome city, proud of its sturdy name, proud of the men who stopped there and made decisions, proud of its domes and lawns and monuments. Of course, Washington is like some other cities you've seen. It has streetcars, haberdasheries, newsstands, coffee shops, and slums. At busy intersections, there are neon traffic signs, which, when the light's against you, say,
"Don't walk."
And when the light changes,
"Walk."
It's a tourist city, which is proper when you think how much of history a busy guide can cover in a day, and when you realize that the District of Columbia belongs to all the people of the state. The tourists know that here their voices have been heard from clear back home, that here their votes are put to work. The tourists go to see the sights they've seen in a thousand pictures of, sights so famous and familiar that they're thrilled to find they look, well, they look just like they thought they'd look. Washington Monument, for example, or the Lincoln Memorial, where the seated and relaxed Abe Lincoln sits between two mighty murals of plain words, his own words.
"With firmness in the right, as God gives us to see the right, let us strive on to finish the work we are in, to do all which may achieve and cherish a just and lasting peace among ourselves and with all nations."
The city moves on busily outside the monument. The tourist goes to see the Capitol, the White House, the museums. Sees all about him statues and inscriptions with more sayings than he's ever seen in his life before. They're wise sayings, profound sayings. At Union Station, for example.
"A man must carry knowledge with him if he would bring home knowledge. Samuel Johnson."
The Archives Building.
"What is past is prologue."
The Supreme Court.
"Justice, the guardian of liberty."
But one of the best is in the Library of Congress.
"The noblest motive is the public good." Virgil.
Now, the tourist thinks that over.
"The noblest motive is the public good."
And with this in mind, he climbs the marble stairs inside the library to come at length upon a case containing a handwritten document.
"The engrossed original of the Constitution of the United States of America."
He sees that the manuscript is aging, that its words are worn as though from use. The writing's dim. It's hard to make it out. It's getting on in years.
"We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. Article 1, Section 1. All legislative..."
The words are dim, but not the meaning of the words. The pens that put this down are dust, but not the marks they made. There was a time when this was shining parchment, when the text was easier to read, when the ink was not yet dry. Suppose that we stopped here in modern Washington before this shrine, were to return, go back a little north by east in time and space to one bright afternoon in Philadelphia, that fine fall day when deputies from 12 free states subscribed their names to a new blueprint of a new society.
"And of the independence of the United States the 12th. In witness whereof we have hereunto subscribed our names, George Washington, President, and Deputy from Virginia."
"Now, gentlemen, we are ready for your signatures. By geographical progression, north to south. The deputies from New Hampshire will please sign first. John Langdon.
John Langdon.
Nicholas Gilman.
Nicholas Gilman.
The delegates from Massachusetts.
Good-looking men, these. They're mostly lawyers. Two or three of them sergeants.
The gentleman from Connecticut, please. William Sanders.
Broome there. William Broome of Delaware. He did surveying for a while.
Roger Sherman.
And now our representative.
Sherman,
of
who just signed.
Alexander
he was a shoemaker before he studied law.
Hamilton. The gentleman from New Jersey. William
That's Livingston. Washington calling the delegation.
Livingston. David Brierley.
David Brierley.
The gentleman from.
The man behind Ben Franklin is Alexander Hamilton. Ben's getting old now, 81. Hey, he slept off and on throughout the whole convention. But when it was important to be awake, he was awake all right and active.
Charles Coatsworth Pinckney.
Charles Coatsworth Pinckney. The
gentleman. Ah, there have been men assembled in a room before, but never to a greater purpose.
The other.
Well.
Abraham Baldwin.
Here comes the last to sign now.
William Jackson, secretary.
Well, now it's really
So, the Constitution has been drafted, signed, and presently will be submitted to the states for their approval. Ah, the convention is all relaxed now. There are handshakes, felicitations. Well, is everybody happy? Will they celebrate, you suppose? Will Rufus King go home to Boston and be welcomed by a welcoming committee from the city? Will appreciative Virginians hoist James Madison on their shoulders and parade him through the streets, shouting, "Father of the Constitution"? Will a thumping band march up and down the town making a noise like this? No. There will be no band.
And I say to you, ladies and gentlemen, the heart of every man and woman, nay, of every child in each and every one of our 13 states, from the rock-bound shores of Maryland to the golden sands of Georgia, should fill and swell with pride on reading the noble and glorious Constitution which our wise and prudent and far-sighted representatives in solemn assembly have framed and admitted to our glorious states for their approval. And I say to you...
No. There will be no speeches. There will be no celebration. No confetti from the windows. Fireworks saluting cannon. Roses strewn beneath the coaches of the delegates. Instead... Suspicion. Suspicion by the very men who fought the long fight so that there could be a constitution drawn for the emancipated states. The farmers and the clerks and the hackmen and the artisans and the grease-grimed blacksmiths in their shops. These men who only lately put away their guns and powder in a good dry place. These men who won a war of freedom. But who know that freedom must be guarded to be kept. And they're suspicious. And they're talking in the common, in the tavern, and in the parlor, and in the foundry room.
Mm-hmm. All right, what else does it say?
Well, that covers it. That's the whole thing.
Constitution. I don't like it.
Why?
Come here with me. Come over at the door. See that spire?
Yes.
That's a church I go to.
Well, what about it?
I like it. I'm a God-fearing man. I want to keep on going there.
Well?
Don't want anybody telling me I have to pray his way.
Well, who'd think of doing that?
It's been done. It happened often. You ever hear state religion?
Yes.
Bad. I don't like it. Don't think we should have it.
Well, we haven't got it.
Nothing in that thing you read me guarantees we won't get it.
You say this here Constitution gives us order and authority, huh?
Yeah.
That we had order and authority under King George before the Revolution. Shucks, the Romans had order and authority under Nero, too. Only the wrong kind and too much of it.
Oh, yes, but surely you can trust the men
it ain't that I don't trust the men who wrote the Constitution. Oh, sure, I trust them, but
Them fellers won't always be around.
Oh, yeah. Well, you don't seem to understand. This is our own authority. Now, if you...
The fact that it's our own don't make no difference. Constitution's fine as far as it goes. But the time to talk authority is after you put it down in black and white that we're all free men. Then we'll give you all the authority you need to keep us that way. What's more, we'll back it up with guns. That fair enough?
Well, the way you talk, you'd think that...
The way I talk? I think it all depends on who's handing out authority. Whether it's to keep men slaves or keep them free.
Didn't think it was necessary. The English thought it was necessary 100 years ago. They've got a Bill of Rights. Where's ours?
Well, maybe they'll get around to that. Maybe they'll amend the Constitution later.
How do we know they will?
Well, maybe they're planning some...
I don't like this maybe business. When my husband Robert got killed at Trenton, there was no maybe about it. He got killed. He knew what he was fighting for, and he was glad to die for it. Now the fighting's over. I want to see it.
I don't know, Jerry. Sometimes I wonder whether you use your head for anything else than to keep your ears apart.
I got my opinion, and I stick to it. The Constitution looks good to me. I don't think it needs no adding to.
Hand me that brick there.
It's a foundation, that's what it is.
Sure, it's a foundation. That's just what I'm talking about. But do you build a foundation and then go away and not build a house? Do you clear the woods and then let the ground go barren?
Ah, piffle.
Ah, the way you argue. Piffle, eh? Is that all you can say? Hand me that brick there.
What's the hurry? Give them time. It's not an easy job to get a new country running right.
That's just the point. It's a lot easier to get it running wrong.
Rights, 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 man. Can't you get that through your head? Why shouldn't rights be written into the Constitution just as much as rules on how to meet and when to vote and how much a senator should get paid?
Not they alone. Not only little men like they, whose names escape us, whose names will never be recalled. The men who left their bloody footprints in the snows of Pennsylvania and buried their comrades in a clearing back of a clump of evergreens. The little men who took it, gave it, stuck for the duration, saw it through. Not they alone are doubters, wondering and grumbling. No, there are big names, too. Names now bandied on the tongue, but later to be lustrous, later to be sainted. Tom Jefferson, George Mason, Jimmy Madison, Pat Henry. Now, take Jefferson, for instance. You know what he says?
The Bill of Rights is what the people are entitled to against any government on earth.
I'll take Pat Henry.
I cannot give my oath to support this Constitution without a Bill of Rights.
Now, take Mason. A wealthy planter of Virginia who'd rather plant a seed of liberty than 20,000 acres of tobacco.
A government to be lasting must be founded in the confidence and affections of the people. Without a Bill of Rights, this government will end either in monarchy or a tyrannical aristocracy. This Constitution has been formed without the knowledge of the people, and it is not proper to say to them, take this or nothing.
Well then... The Constitution is in peril. This document, so handsomely engrossed in Philadelphia, there are doubts about it and suspicions. Will the states approve of it? Approve by ratifying? Will they throw it out? Or will they ratify providing certain changes will be made? The writing's fresh, still fresh upon the parchment. The text is clean, the ink is bold, the meaning clear. Only the worth of the Constitution is uncertain. All the points, the articles, the regulations are well put, but will they be well taken? The states decide. Not one man, two men, three men, but the states united. They decide. What says South Carolina?
We ratify, but off a 4 amendment.
What says Massachusetts, where she stands?
We ratify, but off a 9 amendment.
New Hampshire, you?
We ratify, but proposed 12 amendments.
Rhode Island?
We ratify, but 21 amendments, please.
North Carolina?
26 amendments and the Declaration of Men's Rights.
Virginia?
We ratify, but we're suggesting 29 amendments and a Bill of Rights.
New York?
30!
23 amendments in full faith and credit, and we ratify.
Now, now, Congress may begin. May call itself First Congress. May go to work. May tackle the new job of running a democracy. But it has one thing to remember. A promise is a promise. The people have been promised changes, promised amendments, promised that their freedoms should be written down in black and white for all to see, for all to know, for all to live and prosper by. Well, it'll take time. No quorum to begin with. Bad roads, New York City hard to get to. There's some indifference, too. So, well, days go by. No quorum. Month of March goes by. No quorum. Well, patience. Good things grow slowly. Good things don't come running when you whistle to them. Good things are always fought for, worked for, grown. The acorn to the oak is not an overnight procedure, you know. God himself took several days to make the earth. But one day they begin. They sit down in a drafty hall in New York City and they go to work. At first they're busy with 100 other things, but Madison, he keeps after them. He's a stickler for this Bill of Rights. Madison remembers what the people want. And by this time, carpenters are making changes in the federal hall, adding more room. Now, the place has got to be enlarged. The government's growing, you know. And the representatives, all 55 of them, they work through the noise. They're making some additions of their own. They're working on the Bill of Rights.
Do you think 55 representatives of the American people sat in a hall in New York City, in a drafty hall, and made up articles of freedom? Do you think the congressmen from 13 states made up those freedoms out of their own heads, debated there, deliberated there without assistance? All by themselves, from their own experience? Oh, no. They had much help from many nameless and unknown, from dust in quiet places, from broken bones deep in the earth, deep in forgotten earth, mixed with the empty clay, from bleeding mouths, burnt flesh, cropped ears, from numberless and nameless agonies. The delegates from dungeons, they were there.
I said that men were born equal. That is all I said.
The delegates from ashes at the bottoms of the states, they were there.
The king did not approve.
The gallows delegates whose corpses lifted gently in the breeze, they too. The exiled wanderers, the Christians killed for being Christians, Jews for being Jews, the Quakers hanged in Boston town, they made a quorum also.
Present, we are present.
The murdered men, the lopped off hands, the shattered limbs, the red welts where the whiplash bit into the back. Must you know what they said? Must you know how they argued? Must you be told the evidence, the silent testimony of the raised? Must it be told verbatim? Listen then! That was an argument for an amendment. That was a speech in favor of an article of freedom. That prayed the passage of a Bill of Rights. How much of all this
must be told to be believed? Must it be drawn on diagrams? X marks the spot where decency was last observed. The dotted line shows how the victim staggered. The arrow points to blood. The headsman, he was there in Federal Hall. The man who turned the ratchets on the rack. He sat in the assembly too. Nero was there. Caligula. King Philip. Torquemada. Cotton Mather. All the tyrants and the martyrs who had gone before. Sat quietly, unseen among the representatives. Read from their memoirs, expert testimonies. Found their ways into the records and between the lines. All the long and bloody history of fanaticism, murder in the name of God, torture in the name of love, crucifixion in the name of safety to the crown.
My God, my God, why hast thou forsaken me?
He too sat in the Congress. The mild man, with the scars in his hands and feet, where the spikes went through. He was a consultant in the business at hand. Had he not died because the rulers of a realm denied free speech? Was he not nailed up on a cross between two thieves because his preachments were considered treason? He, the Son of God, was he not executed over an issue of the rights of man? Make no mistake about it. He was there. He sat beside James Madison and Elbridge Gerry and John Page in Federal Hall. Unseen he was. But voting. The men of Congress were collaborated with. They added up the gains and losses and the brave words spoken and the brave songs sung. They weighed the drawn and quartered flesh. They took into account the hemlock and the crucifix, the faggot and garrote. And then they framed amendments to the Constitution. Out of the agonies, out of the crisscross scars of all the human race, they made a Bill of Rights for their own people. For a new, a willful, and a hopeful nation. Made a Bill of Rights to stand against the enemies within. Connivers, fakers, those who lust for power, those who make of their authority an insolence. The Congress of the 13 states, instructed by the people of the 13 states, threw up a bulwark, wrote a hope, and made a sign for their posterity against the bigots, the fanatics, bullies, lynchers, race haters, the cruel men, the spiteful men, the sneaking men, the pessimists, the men who give up fights that have been just begun. The Congress wrote a 10-part epic of amendment.
A
a presentation of RadioClassics.com. Programs are copyright their respective owners. All rights reserved.